Thanksgiving and welcome to the movie podcast. My name is Daniel and joining me today for a very special Thanksgiving bonus episode is Anthony.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. It's me, Anthony. Hello, everyone.
I would love to have that on a t-shirt. You know, just gobble, 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 gobble. We could do it in the different colors of the movie podcast. Yeah. And then just at the bottom, just Anthony. You know, it's that's classic merch right there. I think that's forget our logo. That's what we need to come out. How are you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It's been a great week. Yeah. Watched a lot of content and got to finish off What If. I'm on the Squid Game trend right now and can't wait to talk about that once we're back and doing our full episode. But yeah.
Yes. So like I said at the top of this episode, this is a bit of a bonus episode that we're doing. It's not really a full episode of the movie podcast, but because we had a really great opportunity to talk to a few more of the animators behind What If, we've decided why not just do our, you know, our finale discussion and then go right into our interviews with these awesome animators and do it all in kind of one episode, and then we'll drop it on Canadian Thanksgiving because why not? Instead of spreading out over a bunch of different episodes, probably be best to put it onto one episode for you. So that's exactly what we're going to be doing today. Before we do all of that, I just want to remind you, as always, you can catch a brand new episode of the movie podcast every single Monday and watch out throughout the week for our review episodes and all the latest movies and series. Make sure to follow us at the movie podcast on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Letterboxd. And don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, join our Discord, and write into the show at hello@themoviepodcast.ca. Check our show notes for all of those links and more. So something else this week that was really cool that we got to be part of at the movie podcast was a press conference for The Last Duel, which is directed by Ridley Scott. It's written by Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and Nicole Holofcener. And at the press conference itself was Matt, was Ben, was Nicole, and of course, the person who this film belongs to, which was, I think, was just incredible throughout, Jodie Comer. So they were on a panel and they got to talk all about the making of the film, which I thought was great. And just really, and I'm excited for you guys, for you and Shay, to watch this film so we could talk about just the structure of this movie, because this movie is broken into three different perspectives, right? One from Matt Damon's character, one from the perspective of Adam Driver's character, and then one, of course, the truth perspective, which was Jodie Comer's perspective. And what I really liked about this press conference is they really dove into just the creative process and how this movie was made. One, because they literally got to Ireland to start shooting this movie, and it was the first day of the pandemic. So they literally had to freeze the production, and Matt ended up staying in Ireland for months, I guess, during the pandemic. But they literally got to Ireland and started shooting it. And yeah, it was just a really interesting film. And I was wondering if you had any questions about the making of the movie, Anthony, that I could try and answer from the press conference.
Yeah. So my question, I don't know much about the story. This is an actual true event. These are characters from that time period. These are not made up characters, correct?
Yes. So these are real characters. It's based on a true story, and this is based on a book. The book being called The Last Duel, a true story of trial by combat in medieval France, which, again, a very long name. That's why I think they had to shorten it to The Last Duel. But very much, yeah, this is a real story. These are factual events, obviously, Hollywood sized for the big screen, but this is real, of real characters. And what I thought was really cool is that Matt and Ben wrote, I guess, the male perspectives of it, and then Nicole Holofcener came in and she wrote the third act and pretty much finessed, I guess, Ben and Matt and Ben's acts as well too. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to see, especially after all this time, because this is the first project that Matt and Ben have written together since Good Will Hunting. So this is like 25 years, right, that they've been
interesting.
That they haven't really written something together like that.
Yeah, interesting. They chose this type of story rather than the more homegrown type of story that they're used to, that, you know, we just know them from Good Will Hunting. This is such an out of scope story that I didn't expect them to co-write, even with Nicole as their partner. It just doesn't seem like a Ben Affleck, Matt Damon type of story.
Right. It's funny though, because like this movie takes place in France. It doesn't take place in Boston. Like, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah.
But that was one of the things that they addressed during the press conference too, is that, you know, Matt, I guess, read the book and he went to Ridley Scott, and Ridley Scott read it and loved it. And he said, whatever I was working on next, like he wants to do this, he wants to adapt this book. And Matt basically was having dinner with Ben Affleck one night. I feel like they just have dinner all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, this is kind of just like us. So like, yeah, they're just hanging out one day. And Matt brings up the book to Ben, and Ben's like, why don't we write it? And then that's how it kind of got going. And then they brought Nicole on board, and Ben was originally going to play Adam Driver's role and then step down to more of a supporting role in the film. But I thought Adam Driver was great in the movie. And again, I'm really excited to dive in deeper about it. But the press conference was cool. I would have loved for Adam Driver to be there. I would have loved for Ridley Scott to be there. But I think Jodie Comer really is, she got most of the questions in the press conference too, which I thought was fitting, because she really is the lead in this film. And I think I'm hoping that she gets her, you know, her flowers, because I think she's owed them for sure.
Yeah. She's been like rising up slowly throughout Hollywood with, you know, Killing Eve. And then now she's done Free Guy and The Last Duel. It's so funny to see her in a role with Matt Damon, and like Matt Damon being her, I guess, husband in this story, and then seeing her in Free Guy, where she's, her love interest is the dude from Stranger Things, Joe Keery. It's just so
definitely an age difference,
a huge age difference. Age, it's just, and I always thought Jodie Comer was older than, because her, not just because she looked older, it wasn't that, it was more of her presence. I thought she was more like older actress.
Yeah, 100%. She carries herself.
Yeah.
She carries herself like she's an actress, like an older actress. And I'm like, oh my God, she's my age.
Yeah.
And I just want to just crawl into a ball and die.
Born 1993.
93. Yeah. But yeah, Matt Damon's basically old enough to be her father, more so old enough to be her father. But I guess these are medieval times as well too. So that's just kind of how things were.
That's how they do.
You know, that's 28 years old. She should have grandkids already at that point.
True. I know you were saying that this story is it's an ambitious story, but it's also very tough. They deal with a lot of tough subjects and tough imagery that, you know, not all audience will be accepting of it. Is that, or not accepting it, but not, might be comfortable
with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great point you bring up. And I think the point of the movie as well too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking at a movie, or we're looking at a story that's set in the 1300s, and you're meant to feel uncomfortable. And I also think when you're watching it, it's scary how relevant it is to 2021 as well. And I don't say that lightly, just because there's things that are arguments brought up in this movie, and just, he said, she said arguments that are brought up. You're like, man, like this is still things that we deal with today. And these are still the same perceptions that people have today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really harrowing that way. But they said, like, even in the press conference, like they wanted to tell a story that people will look at and feel like it's relevant to today, and obviously true to the time, but true to the experiences of these people. And the subject matter is very delicate, right? And I also want to be respectful of that. I don't want to joke with it. I think Matt Damon's in a stage of his career that he could choose a role, and his character does bad things in this film. And I don't think he as a person necessarily like cares about the type of characters that he plays in the movies, how they'll be perceived, because he wants to be true to what that character was, even if there are bad characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where I think there's some actors now that only want to be perceived in a certain way, even on film. And I respect Matt Damon for that, just for the sense that he wants to, no matter how awful the character is, even Adam Driver. Adam Driver is a horrible human being in this film. He's very likable in this movie because he's very charismatic, but he does awful things in this movie. So it's still a testament to the kind of actor that he is, that you could still like him in this movie as the charismatic side of him. But when you see the like the heinous things that he does, you're just like, oh my God, like this guy is awful. And that's what I think this movie balances that line of, where it's, let's tell the story, and then let's turn into a big kind of Ridley Scott gladiator fight at the end of the movie. But it's very interesting. I will say it's a very interesting film, and I'm really excited to talk more about it with you guys. But definitely during the press conference, I got a lot more light shed on just how this movie was made and just their thought processes behind it. And again, Jodie Comer is just phenomenal. She's one of those actresses now that whatever she's in next, I'm going to be excited and look forward to.
And this is Ridley Scott's second film. Well, first film out of two this year, correct? He has The Last Duel, and he has The House of Gucci, which also stars Adam Driver.
It does, yeah.
It's so funny.
So that's the thing, right? So again, this movie was supposed to come out last Christmas, yep. And then it got pushed and delayed. So yeah, Ridley Scott has two major award contender films. I'm really curious to see what legs this movie has come award season, or is it going to go to House of Gucci, or is it going to go to The Last Duel? Because I could see it going either way at this point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But today is all about what if the Watcher broke his oath. This is the season finale, episode 9 of What If. Anthony, let's just get right into it. What did you think of this episode?
I thought this episode really did a really good job of summarizing all the other episodes that we saw throughout the year, and really giving it that season 1 closure that I was expecting. There was no cliffhanger. There might have been, but nothing like huge where you're waiting for the next season to happen. I truly, the thing that stood out to me the most in this series is the animation. I think the animation is spectacular.
Yes.
Wouldn't be surprised if it wins some sort of award, an Emmy, for its type of animation. I think the production value of the animation is something you haven't seen in a TV series before. I think that was the biggest standout for me. But I enjoyed each and every story that was told. And I enjoyed the last two episodes the most because it encompassed everything and it made everything feel like, oh, there is a bigger picture to what we're watching. We're just not watching bottle stories. We're watching something bigger. With the Vision, the last episode, I wish it was longer because it was so good. It was like
it's condensed. A movie. It's definitely very condensed. Yeah.
There's a lot of I want to say trust given to these new guardians of the multiverse to just, you know, take over to really like trust in the Watcher and what he was doing. It just felt really quick. And I wish it took a little bit longer to get there.
Yes.
The biggest thing I hope for season 2 is there was a lot of familiar things we've seen. A lot of familiar characters that we've seen. Yes, they were in different positions, but familiarity was the number one thing that I saw in season 1. We saw, you know, Agent Carter. We saw Tony Stark die multiple times or not be the hero. I'm hoping for season 2, and I know this might be a risk, but maybe go a little bit deeper in the Marvel universe and not focus just on
characters that we know,
and even characters that we know, but like make it a very like an episode that continues to be a very long episode. So episode flowing into episode type of series.
100%. And I think that's where I'm at with this episode. I did really enjoy this episode. I would have loved if there was a bit more of a through line throughout the episodes other than the Watcher himself. Because when we get to this episode and it basically is assembling the Avengers, I would have loved for it to maybe have built up to this a little bit more, because it did feel very sudden, or at least give this episode a bit more time to breathe. It would have been great if this was like an hour long. I know that's asking a lot, but there's just so many different plot points happening, and to basically have the Watcher at the beginning of this episode go, You've been chosen. You've been chosen. You've been chosen. Killmonger, you're a piece of shit, but you've been chosen.
Right.
It was just funny of how fast it went. And again, I get it. It's an animated show. There's going to be a lot faster pace that goes on. But when you do see this team come together, it's a really interesting team because it really is just all these different characters from across the MCU that we know and that we love. And we're getting just a very different Avengers team. I thought it was so cool that we got to see T'Challa and Killmonger, you know, talk to one another. And, mm-hmm. you know, and T'Challa referred to him as like my cousin. And he's like, nah, we ain't cousins. And it's like, it's just cool seeing like those character moments, especially it being Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan. I think the Watcher is a character I adore. And I think just him finally after last week's episode, you know, just going toe to toe with Ultron or Infinity Ultron and now just assembling a team Guardians of the Multiverse. I'm really excited to see what they could do in season two with this. You know, they did cut it an episode. You may have noticed when he goes to Gamora, we've never seen Gamora this season, like an episode dedicated to her. Mm-hmm. And Tony Stark was there in a suit that he built. So that was an episode that was actually going to be, you know, what if Tony Stark, I think, went to Sakaar, and that's where there's actually a Lego set that's built on it too, which is crazy. So they actually pushed that episode to the next season. So I'm really curious to see what their goal is for the next season of the show. Will the Watcher continue to be someone who, you know, is he going to now choose not to interfere anymore? Is he going to keep his oath, or are we going to see a bit more of a through line where we're building something throughout the season? Because this, we didn't really see anything start building in this season until the very end. We may have thought that obviously the Watcher being the one consistent in each episode, but it was very cool seeing just, you know, Doctor Strange and Agent Carter and Captain Carter and like Black Widow and my gosh, like just Thor, everyone. Like this episode felt like almost like an anime of just how big it was and just how the light shows that were going on, just these big epic battles that were happening. Any favorite moments from this episode, Anthony?
For me, the whole episode was it's just the animation was so well done. And especially I felt like the production value for these last two episodes were like really set high.
Yeah, definitely.
I did like the opening sequence with Agent Carter recreating Winter Soldier, like that opening sequence.
Oh yeah.
But it's
100%. And her stealth suit as well too.
Yes. Yeah. And I felt like, man, I wish one day we get like a very, like a animated film that looks like that. Cause just with animation and comics, they just work hand in hand, the fluidity of characters and how they perform. And there's no way live action can do it. And CG always doesn't, you know, it's not there yet when it comes to movement of body parts and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. In animation, you're willing to accept a lot more. You suspend your disbelief a lot more. I love that opening sequence where it's just Winter Soldier, let's do it. But it's with Peggy this time. Yeah. Really, really cool. I just loved Peggy and Black Widow throughout the episode, where when Peggy meets, I guess, a variant of Natasha, and they're just both having a shield and they're just like going crazy, throwing the shield at Ultron. Yeah. Awesome moment.
Very, very cool. I'm glad that you mentioned the Gamora, because I was wondering, did I miss an episode?
Yeah, definitely.
Did I miss an episode with Gamora and Tony Stark? But then I realized, no. And you even said it yourself, they left it for the next season. So I'm glad that at least there's going to be some sort of tie into that, because I felt that part was a little bit of a miss on their end. Cause I feel like a lot of audience would be like, what? It's an integral piece. Cause you've seen every character and you understand that why they're being picked, but then you see Gamora and Tony Stark. And again, Tony Stark is completely cut off. Like, he is not the hero of a lot of these multiverses. I'm super stoked to see what season two is. I just wish and hopefully by that time we'll have more characters to play around with the Eternals, with Shang-Chi, with whatever happens,
even
Spider-Man.
From the shows, you know, like, yeah. yeah. there's a lot that you could pull from. And yeah, and that's the thing, you know, I guess when the episode got pulled, you couldn't really remove Gamora from the episode because she really was the only one that I'm like, oh, she's in this episode. She doesn't have as a huge of a role in this episode. So it's interesting that they kept her, but obviously a lot of moving parts when it comes to shows like this. So you can't just remove a character and have it, everything blend well, but yeah. what a cool show. Like, you know, we've gotten, you know, WandaVision, we've gotten Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we've gotten Loki, and now to have the first animated show of the MCU, it's awesome. And I'm hoping now we only get more. You know, there were plans to have a T'Challa as Star-Lord spinoff show, but that was that obviously was not moving forward anymore because Chadwick is no longer with us. But I think there's so much opportunities to do some really cool stuff in the MCU in animated form. And like you said, Anthony, comics and animation just go hand in hand together. And hopefully we'll get to see even more of that in season two and beyond whatever shows they decide to do. So let's get into our discussion with the animators behind What If. We were so lucky to be joined by Anthony Danino and Stephen Wong of Stellar Creative Lab, one of the incredible animation houses behind Marvel Studios' What If. Let's get into our interviews with them right now. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. We're lucky to have you, and congratulations on the finale of What If is finally out there in the world, and you could talk about it, and you don't have to worry about spoilers or anything like that. What's it feel like now that this show's finally wrapped up for the first season?
Oh, it feels amazing to, you know, see the response and following along with everyone week to week. Yeah, it's been amazing to see the response to the show. Yeah,
that's awesome. So, as unit director, what is your role on the show?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty broad, but, you know, in a nutshell, you know, one of the main things that I do is I kind of try to plug into the kind of creative team on the Marvel side as much as possible to kind of, you know, understand, you know, their intent and what they're really going for these characters given, you know, the episode. And then kind of, you know, shepherding that along our internal team so that everyone on our side, you know, knows what the intent of everything is. And then beyond that, working with our team to figure out how we're going to accomplish all of these visuals and kind of ideas that that are proposed.
Yeah, it's a lot. And especially in a show like this, that's pulling from so many literally different multiverses within the MCU. It's a lot of things to have to keep in mind and kind of manage, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Anthony, was there any like big surprises that you encountered while making the What If episodes?
You mean, you know, are you talking technical story-wise or
both? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously every story was a surprise, you know, you never kind of know where each episode is going to go, you know, and we have a smaller scope, right? We're one of many studios working on it. So we're not always kind of plugged into whatever else is happening, and we're finding, you know, which is cool because you're getting to kind of watch this stuff, you know, along with everyone else, and you're waiting for your episode or your sequence to kind of come up. But the challenges, I think was the question, right? Honestly, the main challenge with the show is kind of just inherent to the show is anything can happen, and you're always kind of, you know, dealing with a new character, a new sequence, a different world, a different version of the character, and what are those subtle differences that make the characters, you know, unique in this world? Because there is a big, you know, pool to draw from. We know this is part of the MCU, but it's a different version of these characters. So it's kind of the biggest challenge is just kind of keeping it all straight. You know, yeah. It's really, really important to be kind of plugged into, you know, like I said, you know, the people on the Marvel side who kind of know this world and are really driving it. And yeah, what their intent for the characters are.
Was there any sequence that like took a really long time to make while building your episodes?
Yeah, I mean, we worked on What If Ultron 1. And, you know, there's not a particular one in there that we worked on that was harder than the next. They are kind of all, you know, they're all challenging in their own way. You know, some have a different scope. Some you're moving through a lot of environments. Some you're dealing with a lot of characters. But, you know, there's more action, which is a little bit more, you know, it's a little bit more involved. So I don't think one stands out above the rest in terms of difficulty. It just overall is a challenging show for sure. And I think you can kind of see that on screen when you see kind of the ambition that the show has.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're looking at a show, especially something that's, I guess, contained within 30-minute episodes, you're covering a lot of ground. Where in your episode alone, you're seeing so many different characters that were set up over time in the MCU in different films, and now it's just like we're just running through this, which is great, but it's also a lot. It's sensory overload too, which is great, like for viewers, because I think what this show does so well is that it really is like it's a reward for longtime MCU fans, because there's so many elements that are just drawn from across all of the films, and it really is paying off all of those like just great fan moments. For yourself, before working on the show, were you an MCU fan? Did you have a favorite MCU movie that you were particularly fond of going into this show?
Yeah, I was definitely a fan. I've seen, been following along ever since they started. I was a Marvel Comics fan growing up. I really do like where they're taking the Thor movies. I think they're really interesting. You know, like they've kind of, I think, found what's really, really great about that character. And, they're really kind of exploring really fun and interesting, storylines, and also just visuals, I think, are quite strong in those movies.
Oh, definitely, especially with Taika Waititi there. And even when you see in the Thor episode of the season, it's a lot more of just like Thor having a good time. And I think Thor is a character that I think suits that so well, where he just is just enjoying himself. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
How did you get your start in the industry?
I went to art school. After high school, I went straight to art school and kind of was more focused on photography at that time. But kind of within that program, I kind of somehow ended up doing a stop motion animated film as my kind of thesis project, somehow without knowing how to do any of it. But I realized kind of that I did want to get into filmmaking there, and it was kind of a way that is a medium that really kind of suited my personality, and I could kind of create something on my own. And once that kind of dawned on me, I decided to come out to Vancouver, go to animation school, and kind of took off from there. So went to Vancouver Film School for animation, and shortly after that started my first job as an animator on a feature out here.
Did you have any inspirations, like inspiring films from or TV shows that you kind of took from?
Yeah, absolutely. The main one for me, I think that was kind of like a I say it often as a game changer for me was when I saw Akira growing up. And that kind of changed the entire medium for me, and just kind of stopped being something that you'd kind of watch on Saturday mornings, and kind of really broadened my mind, at least, and kind of opened me up to a whole different kind of storytelling within the medium. That was a big touchstone film for me.
Yeah, me too. Like Akira, it's funny because Akira is so big in North America, but if you go to Japan, it is big, but it's not as big as it is here.
Oh, that's interesting.
I guess, and I was learning about this through multiple podcasts related to Akira and the history. I'm like, man, that's so surprising. And I guess it's because it was always an animation style that came from there, and culturally it was always there. Mm-hmm. But for us, it was so new that even for you, like, it inspired you to go into a whole medium.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, it was just, like we said, it was completely new for us. Right. And I can totally see what you're saying about, it might not be maybe as special when it's something you see over here a lot, but, mm-hmm. coming from the Disney, growing up with Disney and that kind of thing, which I love too. But, when those started playing on, Space Channel or Sci-Fi Channel or whatever, that was just a whole nother world opened up.
Oh, definitely. And I just think of like the motorcycle shot alone. Like, you see that in so many different just animated shows and in live action. I was wondering for yourself, have you worked in the live action space at all? Because just like on the previous side or anything like that?
Yeah, I've worked on a number of live action films as a previs artist. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What's the biggest difference between working on the previs side or working for an animated show?
The biggest difference, I mean, it's where I worked in live action, because I was working in previs, you're basically making an animated version of the film before they film. So day to day, it's actually not that different for what I did. But the main difference would be that, yeah, you're coming up with these ideas when you're pre-vising and that kind of thing, and then it goes off for somebody else to accomplish.
Right.
For, you know, in animation, when you're you know, doing your camera and staging and you're planning out your sequences, then you have to actually, you know, finish them. That's like the bane. It may seem obvious, but that's the big difference.
What are you most excited for people to see in What If this season? Is there something that you worked on that when you see that, you're like, yes, that was something that that has my fingerprints on it?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun to slice Thanos in half. I thought that was fun.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So we enjoyed doing that, and very much enjoy seeing the reactions that got. That's the standard.
That's awesome.
Said on the show, it reminded me of when Trunks, I don't know if you watched Dragon Ball Z, but when Trunks sliced Frieza right in half when he landed on planet Earth, it was just like, yeah, it was very funny. It's just very similar. It's like, here's this guy that you expect him to like destroy, and he's just like, no, you're done.
Yeah, for sure. The immediacy of it was great. Yeah.
And I think that's what's been so amazing about just What If as a show, is that there's so many just characters that are just, it just defies expectations every time we watch it, right? Characters that we think we know who they are, and now they're completely different. And I think that's what's been so special about the show. So we just want to say thank you so much for all your incredible work on it and for taking the time to talk with us today. And, you know, we love it. Everybody loves it. And we can't wait to see where things go for season two. So hopefully we don't have to wait too long. But Anthony, thank you so much again for your time today.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Thanks, Anthony. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're good.
Hello, Stephen.
Hello. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, we're honored to have you on the movie podcast. So thank you so much. So you've probably been talking to a lot of different people, but you've heard this a lot, I'm hoping, as well, too, of how much we love the show and how much the world is loving the show. How's it feel to finally have the final episode out and to be able to talk about everything now?
Yeah, it's a big relief since we've been working on this project for a long time. And there's a lot of hours put into making the show great. So it's good to see the reaction around the episode I work on specifically. And I'm just really glad that a lot of people are enjoying the show.
Oh, of course. And we love it. And that's the thing, like, anytime one of these MCU shows now have finished, we've been just like, oh man, now we got to wait. But luckily there's been a lot this year that we've been able to, you know, pad the year out with, because it's just been so nice to look forward to something every single week, you know. And I think What If was an awesome one to look forward to every week.
For sure. I think for MCU specifically, they really space out a lot of different points that we can look forward to throughout the year. So I'm just really glad that I'm a part of What If, and there's still like movies coming this year. I think Thor is coming soon. So yeah, I'm really excited for that too.
You know, Stephen, maybe you can kind of give us a little bit of a breakdown of what a background artist does, so our audience kind of gets to know a little bit more about your role in the What If.
Yeah, so there's mainly two parts. First is 2D layout, where we draw really roughly to define the perspective, action, as well as like the sizes of objects in each shot. And this is in black and white. And then there's painting, where we color in these roughs and try to push the cinematic lighting in the scene. And for What is specifically the show's background is hugely inspired by classic American illustrators. So it was really fun to stylize these environments in that direction and try to create interesting textures.
What tools did you use to build this? Was it all through Maya?
No, actually, the main software that I use is Photoshop. And basically everything I do is in 2D and then kind of transfers into 3D through Light and Comp in our artist departments.
Very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. And the backgrounds on this show is something that, you know, as we've been watching the show weekly, we've been saying in our weekly recaps of just how gorgeous the visuals are of the show, and just the backgrounds, especially where it, those moments where you just have the watcher just in a scene, just looking over everything. It is very cinematic. And of course, you know, this show is within the canon of the MCU. And what was it like bringing such a cinematic, I guess, feeling to an animated show?
There's obviously a lot of challenges along the way. One emphasis that we have is just to try to push the cinematic and atmosphere as much as we can. And so in the show, you can see a lot of rim lights on the characters that makes them stand out from the environment. And for environment specifically, we always try to design these environments in a way that have interesting shapes, but not too interesting so that it stands out over the characters.
Right.
What was your biggest surprise working on the show?
Do you mean in terms of plot lines or?
It could be both. It could be technical or plot lines.
I think the plot line was definitely Thanos being split in half. I actually painted one of the shots that is showed like when he was split in half. So that was pretty cool seeing everybody's reaction from expecting them having a big fight and then turned out being shocked.
That's a popular answer.
Yeah, it is very popular.
We were just talking to Anthony, who's the unit director as well, and he said the exact same thing.
Yes. It was like when I was first looking through these storyboards, I was pretty shocked as well.
Were you always a background artist, or how did you get your start within the industry?
I actually always wanted to do an art-related job, but I never thought I would be in the animation industry doing backgrounds. I went to college studying illustration, and I remember at the time I was pretty lost, and then I was thinking of maybe doing something illustration related in magazines or a newspaper, and then eventually I wanted to become a concept artist for games. So I went to Montreal to study a bit, and then through that I was able to develop a portfolio that is able to transition me from that to the animation industry, which I'm really grateful for.
That's awesome. And I think Canada is such a hub for so many different aspects of entertainment. You know, Montreal obviously is huge for games and Vancouver for animation and film. I'm assuming you're a big video game fan as well, too, if that's the industry you wanted to go into. What are some of your favorite games that you've maybe recently played or even growing up that you loved playing?
I think one of the... This might be a really popular answer, but League of Legends is one of my favorite games. Although I don't play it now, but when I was growing up, it was a huge influence for me to get into the gaming industry, specifically their splash arts, their lore, and their cinematic trailers. That was a really inspiring kind of game for me in terms of my art career.
That's awesome.
What about movie inspirations or TV series inspirations?
I think Ghibli movies and Disney movies are definitely one of the biggest influences. I've always had a strong interest in movies as well. I think my favorite movies would be Interstellar, I think. Like it's, other than the storytelling of the film, it also has a really great shots as well. And yeah, that was a really big part of why I wanted to get into this industry as well.
Interstellar is a big one. We talk about that film all the time. And I think it's a running I think just joke on our show of just how often that feels like every week, a couple weeks goes by and either I have watched it or Anthony's watched it or one of our other colleagues have watched it. It's a big one for us too. Other than working on What If, is there any other projects that you're working on that you're allowed to talk about? If you're not allowed to talk about anything, that's okay too. We're just curious. Is there anything that you're working on?
Nothing much in particular, but, I hope what we're working on next will be exciting for you guys too.
That's awesome. And again, Stephen, we're so thankful that you took the time to talk to us today on the Movie Podcast. We can't wait to see where things go in season two. We hope that you come back to work on it and we can talk to you again.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Wow. As Shay would say, if Shay was on this episode, he would say, wow, the way you guys ask those questions and they gave you those answers. Wow. That's what Shay would say.
He would have said that one question and it, you know, it like that they didn't even know how to answer it. That was, that was remarkable.
Yeah. You know, anytime Shay's not on an episode, we always have to channel his energy. And I think we do a good job of it. Yeah. Honestly, as we were saying at the top of this episode, What If has been such an awesome show just to go week to week watching. And the fact that we got to speak to Genevieve last week and then now we got to speak to Anthony and Steven this week, you know, there's such incredible humans behind the movies and shows that we love so much. And we never take it for granted that we get to have them on the Movie Podcast. So we're so thankful for them for joining us. And we're so thankful for you to listening. So if there's any other person in the world that you want us to have on the show, let us know. Because the worst thing that they could do is say no. You know, my mom tells me all the time, hey, Daniel, you should just ask Tom Hanks to be on your show. You know, yeah, mom, I'll be honest. I'd love for Tom Hanks to be on the Movie Podcast. Tom, I know you're listening to this episode. Just shoot us an email, hello@themoviepodcast.ca, and we'll arrange something, right? Who do you want to have on, Anthony?
I would probably get a director, either Fincher or, because Fincher does really good conversations. Like, he's very conversal.
He'd be roasting us the whole time, though.
Yeah. But like, I watched his conversations, especially when involving Seven and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, he's great to have as a host. Or a Denis Villeneuve.
Yo, Denis, you got Dune coming out, man. Come on the show. I know you just did Seth Meyers, but you could come on our show too. Or Stephen Colbert, he was on. You know, you could do the Movie Podcast as well. We're up there as well. We're in the same league as them, are we not?
I think we're beyond that.
There you go. Yeah. You heard it from Anthony himself. Thank you so much for listening to this week's bonus episode of the Movie Podcast. Don't forget, you can catch a new episode of the Movie Podcast every single Monday and watch out for our review episodes on all the latest movies and series. Also, don't forget to follow us at the Movie Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Letterboxd, and check out our show notes for all of those links and more. We hope you have a great Canadian Thanksgiving. That was this time with the Movie Podcast, and we'll see you next.